97.9 FM, WCHL, and chapelboro.com present The Art of Potential, an illuminating talk show dedicated to getting your community educated, hired, and inspired. The Art of Potential combines real-world knowledge and expertise aimed at helping our community reach their full potential. Now, The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Hi, this is Kristen Heemstra. Welcome to The Art of Potential show. Oh my gosh, we have such an exciting show. I'm so excited to tell you about our show today. So we are having on our show the amazing Peter Walsh. Welcome, Peter.
Hello. I'm not sure if the amazing Peter Walsh has turned up, but I am definitely here, Kristen. It's great to be here. Thank you.
It is great to have you here, and I just may have to disagree because I'm just going to tell the audience a little bit about you and why I think you're amazing, and I have a feeling they're going to agree with me.
Okay.
So you are a star, a television star. You've done Clean Sweep. You've had your own show on the Oprah Winfrey Show, Enough Already with Peter Walsh. You're a regular on Rachel Ray Show. You've been on Nate Berkus' show. You've written a ton of books. You've done all kinds of vlogs, or I like to watch them and learn how to organize my life. So I would say you're pretty amazing, Peter.
Yeah, you know, I have a very, very unusual job. I mean, my job, I'm known as a professional organizer, and my job is essentially to go into homes that are overrun with clutter, and that can be, you know, from the minor to the major, and really help people, you know, reestablish, I guess, you know, their relationship to their stuff. And while, you know, the end result is a much cleaner, tidier, better functioning home, what I really do is look at what the stuff means, what has happened where your relationship with your stuff has gone off the rails, and really just help people get it all back together.
And you do an amazing job of that. And I love how you put that, because you're so right about stuff being, it's not about the stuff, it's about the person. And one of the questions I have for you is, I know you work with clutter, but it's not just physical clutter. What are the different types of clutter you come across?
You know, it's interesting that a couple of things there. The first one is that when you say to someone, you know, I've got clutter in my life, or there's clutter in my home, people automatically and reasonably think of the physical clutter, the kids' toys on the floor, the clothes spewing out of the wardrobe, you know, all the stuff on the kitchen counter. And that's definitely clutter, but for me, I define it much more broadly. For me, clutter is anything at all that gets between you and the life you want to be living. So clutter can be physical, definitely. Clutter can be emotional.
Yes.
It can be, you know, that grudge that you harbor that just won't let you get on to the next relationship. Clutter can be financial, you know, a whole lot of preconceptions about money that stop you living your best financial life. It can be, clutter can be social, you know, a whole attitude to people or to situations that really stop you being the most social person you can be. It can take a whole lot of different forms: physical, social, psychological, financial, anything, emotional, relationship, anything that gets between you and the life you want to live, as far as I'm concerned, is clutter, and you need to get it out of your life.
I love that. I absolutely love that, and I'm complete agreement with that. Now, I know your show usually handles the physical side because it's so visual, so it lends itself well to television. Is that your favorite type of clutter to work with?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You have to tell, if you're going to work with people, the best way to do it in the way I do my job is to simply tell their story with their stuff. And if you think about it, every single thing in your home, every item in your home is there because you brought it into your home, either physically purchased it and then brought it into your home, or you accepted it and brought it into your home, allowed it to come into your home. So that means that every single item in your home has a story. Every single item has a narrative to it, and every single item, for that reason, has power.
Oh, interesting. So I love that. Yes.
And so when you look at, You know, if you're struggling with magazines, for example, you can't let go of magazines. When I look at them, I see a pile of paper with words and symbols printed on them. What you might see is not magazines, but see a whole lot of recipes that will help you create a better domestic life, make you a better cook, make you more like Martha Stewart, make you better up on fashion, make you more informed. That's what you see. And so that's the power that those magazines have on you. I might see a wardrobe full of overflowing clutter, or I might see a room full of toys. And for me, they're just toys. But for you, the power that they have is they remind you of your best days with your children.
Mm-hmm.
And so to get rid of them means letting go of that memory. It means moving on. And that's why it's never about the stuff. If you're having trouble with the things in your home, no matter what it is, it's not about the stuff. It's about the memory or the meaning or the power of that item in your life. And if you don't deal with that power or meaning or memory, it's extremely difficult to get rid of it. And what you end up doing usually is fighting with your partner or family about it.
And then it sucks the power right out of you, too, in the same way.
It's really interesting. When we talk about clutter, we use really specific language. We say, oh, there's so much stuff in there, I felt buried. Or don't go in there, you can't breathe. Or, you know, every time I go into that room, I feel like I'm drowning. And there's a very good reason we use words like that, drowning, can't breathe, overwhelmed. Yeah. It's because we know that too much stuff in our life, too much clutter in any form, actually starts to suck our life away. And it's interesting that we use that kind of terminology to talk about the clutter in our lives. And so for me, it's definitely important to reduce the stuff, to get rid of the stuff, but it's way more important to help you come out from under that and to be able to live a much healthier, better, more focused life without the weight of the stuff.
Hey, and you are so right about this. And one of the things that I have enjoyed in seeing you do some of your things, I particularly like the episode you did with Mackenzie Phillips, is just kind of talk her through what was going on. 'Cause you do therapy.
I'm very careful to tell people, Kristen, that I'm not an IST. I'm not a psychologist.
You're not. I agree.
I'm not an exercise physiologist. You know, I'm not a nutritionist.
An IST. I love that. Yep.
I'm not an IST. But what I am, I bring kind of an objective third-party observation to this. And I found that if I tell the truth, if I simply mirror the truth, I often will say I bring two things to the work I do, a helping hand and a mirror. And I simply hold up a mirror to the person and let them and tell them exactly what I see. And in the case of Mackenzie Phillips, here's an incredibly talented woman. She was, you know, the daughter of John Phillips, one of the founders of the Mamas and the Papas. She'd had essentially an IV drug abuse problem for, I don't know, maybe 15 years.
Yeah,
it was shooting up almost every day. And she's come through that, you know, incredibly. But her home had a ton of stuff in it, and essentially everything in the house reminded her of her days when she was a junkie. And so, you know, it was not just helping her tidy up, clean up, move stuff out. There was a closet, a walk-in closet, where she used to sit almost every single day for 15 years and shoot up. And so in that closet were clothes that reminded her of that. There were, you know, there were syringes and needles, you know, on the floor. Every time she stepped into that space, that part of her came rushing back. The stuff took her back to that moment. In the same way that I've worked with families who've lost a child through some tragic illness, and when they step back into the child's room, all that stuff comes rushing back. Or someone who's lost a parent, and when they step into a room, you know, the sorrow and the torture of loss comes rushing back.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I have a lot of questions for you about that. So you are listening to the Art of Potential show. This is Kristen Heemstra, and I am talking with the amazing Peter Walsh.
You're listening to the Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra, and I am talking with Peter Walsh. You are listening to the Art of Potential show, and Peter Walsh is an, what would you call yourself, a decluttering and organization guy?
You know, I was lucky. I worked on the Oprah Winfrey show for a long time, and I would have called myself, you know, a decluttering and organizing guy. Oprah actually called me the get your whole life organized guy. And I kind of like that moniker.
Yeah.
You know,
it's,
you know, it's definitely about, you know, getting your stuff decluttered and organized. But at the end of the day, and this is what I find so wonderful and amazing about what I do, without exception, every single time I work with someone and help them declutter and organize their physical space, they will say to me, a couple of things. One, it feels like a weight has been lifted from my shoulders.
Yep.
Two, this process has been transformative. And the other thing that I love, which is a great image, every single time I declutter a space that children use in a family where there are kids, every single time when that space is decluttered, when the children come back into the room for the first time, they spontaneously dance.
Oh, how funny.
It is so wonderful, and it happens without prompting every single time. Little kids spontaneously dance in a clear, open, decluttered space.
That is really funny. I love that. Huh.
And it's actually kind of, I think, symbolic of what an open space does for you. It's hard to explain to people, but the truth is, if you take all of the clutter out of a space, and whether it's the space in your house, which is most obvious,
right,
or it's the space between your ears, you know, the emotional mm-hmm. clutter, the anger, the frustration, the resentment, if you take the physical or emotional clutter out of your space, you will be absolutely astounded at what flows back into that space. It will transform your life, because once the space is clear and open, it allows you to be less stressed and more focused, more open to new opportunity, more open to the approach of other people, I think more compassionate, more relaxed, more at ease, and it is amazing just the things that flow into that space, opportunity, love, calm. You know, all these things flow back in to fill the space in a way that you cannot imagine. I know it sounds, as we say in Australia, a little oogie boogie, but it's absolutely true. A decluttered, organized space will transform your life.
Well, in some ways, what you're talking about sounds to me like a form of meditation, in that the inspiration is allowed to then come in once the mind is clear. So
it's absolutely true, and I'd push it even one step further than that. The word organize and the word organic come from the same root.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about wanting to be more organic, you know, we all want to shop and buy and be more organic,
right,
eat more organic. You know, organic is, you know, more whole, more human, more complete, more natural, more one with ourselves. That's what buying or shopping or eating or being organic is. And if you're more organic, if you're more organized, you're more organic, you're more authentically who you should be. And so you are absolutely right. It just moves you. In a way, it's a meditation, but you end up surrounded, instead of by a whole lot of crap that stresses you out, you end up surrounded only by those things that help you create the life you want. And if you only have the things around you that reflect the life you want and help you create the home, the family, the relationship, the life that you want, then then you are so nurtured and supported by your home that you're really ready, you're on a springboard for success in every area of your life. It's that simple. It really is that simple. We buy stuff thinking that it's going to give us happiness or relaxation or completeness or prestige or self-esteem. We buy all this stuff waiting for that promise, those promises to be fulfilled. Stuff can never fulfill those promises. And so we have a house full of crap, a life full of these unfulfilled promises, and we're living kind of, you know, quiet frustration surrounded by stuff that doesn't mean anything to us. Whereas if you get all that crap out of your house and out of your head and only have the things around you that represent or help you create the life you want, it's obvious. You'll be in a much better, a much more exciting, a much more productive place.
Now this, I have to tell you, Peter, this all sounds wonderful. Like, I am totally drinking the Kool-Aid you're selling.
Yeah, but I'm hearing an edge of skepticism in your voice,
no,
system, which has me very nervous.
Yeah.
Go on. Where are you going?
It sounds great putting it into practice when you're pulled, and I'm just curious how you personally do this, because you're pulled in many different directions at all the time.
Sure. Everyone is.
Right. So how do you manage that? How do you stay organized in that way?
Okay, there's a couple of things. Number one, you've got to stop blaming other people.
Yes.
You have to accept that this is your job. Of all the jobs you have in life, this has to come first.
When you say this, you mean...
Partners don't come first, kids don't come first, jobs don't come first. All of those are an offshoot of this philosophy. Because think about this for a second. If you don't create the life you want, who will? It's as simple as that.
You're right.
If you don't create the life you want, nobody else will. And so what you have to do, everyone has to do, is stop and ask themselves, what is the vision I have for my life? What do I want from my life? That's the question. What do I want from my home? What do I want from my relationship? What do I want from my job? What do I want from this room, for example? Let me give you a really simple example.
Absolutely.
If I was coming into your home, are you in a relationship with someone?
Yes.
Okay, good. So do you live together?
Yes.
Okay, good. So if I were to come to your home, the first place I would tackle would be the master bedroom.
Okay.
So I would get you and your partner to stand outside the master bedroom, and this is exactly what everyone should do for every room of their house, but I'll use the master bedroom as an example. Give me three words that describe for me what you want from the perfect master bedroom. Give me three words.
Relax, serene. Great. I just think of downloading at the end of the day. When I go in there, I want to be comfortable.
Okay, so relaxed, comfortable, and?
Serene.
Serene. Okay, great. Very platonic. Okay, they're great words. Whenever I ask people this question, I get those words and words like sanctuary, haven,
mm-hmm. yep.
getaway,
yep.
romantic, kid-free,
yes.
spicy, all of those words. So we've got those words that you've just said, relaxing, download, comfortable. Mm. Now, we step into the master bedroom together, and you and your partner would have agreed on these words. That's what you want from the perfect master bedroom. We step into the master bedroom, and there are clothes on the floor.
It might be there sometimes.
Okay, so do clothes on the floor give you comfortable and relaxing?
Not so much.
Okay, then they should not be there, number one.
Right.
No,
yeah.
They have to go into a hamper.
Yeah.
There's a computer on a desk in the corner.
Yes,
and
maybe.
And your partner looks at me and says, well, every day when I get home from work, I have to check email. That's perfectly reasonable.
Right.
But let me ask you, does a computer desk and computer in your bedroom give you comfortable and relaxed?
Maybe not.
No, it has to go. And so what yeah. you do, then it becomes not about the stuff, but it becomes about, does this room reflect what you want from a master bedroom? And if you take everything out of the room except the things that reflect haven, sanctuary, getaway, relaxing, comfortable, romantic, erotic, if you take everything out except the things that reflect that, that you and your partner have agreed are what you want from the perfect master bedroom, when you then step into that room at any time, instead of feeling stressed or overwhelmed or not super relaxed, that room will give you exactly what you want from the perfect master bedroom. That's how you do it in every room of your house. In each room, there should only be the things that answer the question, does this item help give me what I want from this space? That's how this process works.
And I'm going to have to go home and do that. We're going to take a quick break, but I just love how you said that, and I actually want to revisit the from, because that's really important.
That's really important. Okay, yeah. Great.
Okay, you are listening to The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra, and I am talking with my guest, Peter Walsh. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra with The Art of Potential Show, and I am talking with the amazing Peter Walsh. He is the go-to guy to help us get our life organized. And Peter, we were just talking about getting what we want from space. And prior to that conversation, we were talking about the number one thing we are all individually tasked with is creating our life first and foremost.
Absolutely.
So,
and you know what? It's hard for people to understand initially because we're so trained to use the word for instead of from. What do you want for your kids? What do you want for your wedding? What do you want for your engagement? What do you want for the kitchen? What do you want for the master bedroom? No, 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 no. The first question you ask is, what do you want from this space? If you want to start removing the clutter from your relationship, sit down tonight with your partner and have one of the scariest conversations you will ever have, but rewarding, by saying to each other, I want to talk to you about what each of us wants from our relationship.
Yes, that would be an exciting way to start your evening.
The thing is, people go into a life together without ever asking each other that question, or they'll buy a house together.
Yeah.
Without asking, what do we want from this house? Or they'll have kids together and not ask, what do you want from our family? Or they'll get a joint bank account and never ask, what do we want from our financial life?
Well,
and so there's never agreement about how you might move from where you are to where you want to be to create that perfect home or life or family or relationship or financial life. And so you end up spending most of your life arguing about stuff that's absolutely ludicrous.
You're absolutely right. And you're talking about a total paradigm shift in the way we approach and live.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's a paradigm shift away from investing in the stuff.
Right.
And thinking we're going to get a whole lot of things from our stuff. Focus, calm, direction, self-esteem. And instead moving it back into our relationships, which is where all that stuff should come from. If you think you're going to get self-esteem or affirmation or direction or happiness or love or consolation from stuff, you could not be more wrong. Stuff will turn on you like a crazy, psychotic lover. Seriously.
It will, you're right.
And it's like Glenn Close in that, what was that movie with the rabbit?
Oh, yeah, with the rabbit, she's boiling it, yeah.
Fatal Attraction.
Yes.
That is what your stuff does to you, because, look, I'm joking, but I'm serious.
No.
Think about it. You open the door of your house, you step in, there is crap everywhere. You go into your bedroom, there's that, you know, $2,000 exercise machine covered in 2 weeks of clothes that you haven't used for 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the clothes you love, there's all costume jewelry all over the place. There's a pile of unread books, all those things you thought would make you smarter, thinner, happier, you know, more interesting. None of those have done that, but they're completely now taking up your space, and every time you look at them, instead of giving you all of those things, all you can think of is what a loser I am, and I hate all this crap.
Well, it's that, and all those things represent an ideal of who we want to be. So they're all, it's a dream.
And the thing is, that's what I call the product and the promise. We buy the product, but we invest in the promise that we think those things will give us.
Yes.
And I can tell you, they will never deliver.
No, well, especially if we don't read the books, for example.
Well, that's exactly it. Or use the exercise machine. We think that somehow magically these items will give us all of those things. And that's what advertising is about and TV is about. And, you know, it's all about convincing us that just, you know, eating one more burger will make us, you know, more social, or drinking one more cola will make us, you know, younger and more interesting, or, you know, reading this book will make us more chatty in the social circuit. It's all crap. It's all crap.
It is, and yet it's a very interesting reflection of us as just kind of our collective conscious of what we all are kind of striving for. So
And I am happy to give that collective consciousness a massive kick in the ass.
And that's what you're doing with your life, and it feels good, doesn't it?
Well, I look around my house, and I'm not the crazy organizing guy. Like, my shirts are not color-coded. You know, everything isn't labeled. But I can tell you that everything in my house, I have made a conscious decision to have it here, and everything I look at has a great memory or moves me closer to the things I want from my house. Open, easy to clean, welcoming, relaxing, motivating. You know, that's what everything in my house does for me, and anything that doesn't, it's out the door.
So let me ask you, do you see an issue with people's time orientation and their desire to hold on to things? Because
There's two questions in there. The first one, time.
Yes.
People say, I don't have time to do this.
And actually,
total crap.
Yeah, no, total I crap. Actually meant their orientation toward their own lifespan. Because you're talking about somebody who's very engaged in their future. They're thinking about what they have going.
Yes. You have, absolutely, that's an issue. You have to be in your life. Most people are not in their lives. They're simply passive observers of their life going on around them. You have to be in your life. And by that I mean you have to be mindful. So let me show you how this works. Practically, if everything you buy has to help you create the life you want, when you go shopping, normally the process is I see, I want, I buy.
Yes.
That's normally the process, right?
Yep.
If you're in your life, there's another step. I see, I want, pause. Will this item help me create the life I want? Will this item move me closer to the life I want? Will it cost so much that it's going to cause financial crisis? Is it so much that my partner will be angry that we haven't discussed it? Am I buying it just because I'm stressed and want some retail therapy? You know, you stop and you become mindful of the place this object is going to take in your home and in your life. Will this item help me create the life or the home that I want? If the answer is yes, then buy it. Knock yourself out.
Right.
But if you can't answer yes to those questions, if price is the best thing about an object, it's on sale, let's get it, bargain.
Right, yep.
If price is the best thing, then no, don't buy it. So instead of I see, I want, I buy, the process now is I see, I want, pause. Will this item help me create the life I want? Yes, go ahead. No, walk away. So you then start creating a level of mindfulness about your choices. I walk up to my partner, I come home from work, I'm tired, mm-hmm. I'm about to say something bitchy to my partner.
Mm-hmm.
Normally it would be, I think, I open my mouth, I say. But now it is, I think, I open my mouth, pause. Will this word, which is going to be clutter,
right.
help me create the relationship I want? Will this move me close to my partner or farther away? If it's going to move you farther away, keep your mouth shut.
Right.
But if it will help you create the life you want, the partnership you want, then say it. So you end up with every choice, you become more mindful of whether your choices are helping you get rid of clutter and creating the kind of life you want. So that's how you start using your time better.
This
mindfulness.
Yes, and I can't wait to put this into practice. We're going to take a break again, but when we come back, I want to talk about how to declutter some of the stuff that's buried, because I do think there's sometimes that can get kind of hot for people.
Sure.
You are listening to the Art of Potential show with Kristen Heemstra and my guest, Peter Walsh.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra. You are listening to The Art of Potential show. I have the amazing Peter Walsh on, and we are talking about organizing your life. So, Peter, when we go in to organize our lives, we've talked about our clutter and such, but some of the clutter that I've seen in just working with people throughout years is very deep-seated clutter. It has to do with relationships that haven't gone well that we
sure.
still hold on to. And I know, like I said earlier, a lot of your stuff is about physical clutter, but is there a way that you could parallel cleaning out the physical clutter with some of the emotional clutter that's there?
Yeah, you know, the thing is, in people's homes, there are two main types of clutter. There is memory clutter,
right.
and that's the stuff that reminds you of an important person or achievement or event from the past. Kids' baby clothes when you've got teenage boys, all those books from college, even though you haven't been there for 20 years, you know, the trophies from when you were a kid, memory clutter. Then
yeah.
there's I might need it one day clutter, and that's all the stuff you hold on to in anticipation of a lot of imagined futures, you know, all the stuff mm-hmm. you think, I'll need that one day. The thing is, particularly with memory clutter, there's usually a strong sentimental attachment. And so what you need to do, and this is becoming more and more common with families who are, you know, downsizing their parents and inheriting a house load of
yeah.
stuff from their childhood, when it's sentimental clutter, memory clutter, you have to separate the memory from the object, because the fear is, if I let go of the object, I will lose the memory. And that's what paralyzes people. And so the way to do that is, and this sounds weird, the way to do that is, instead of, if you have a room full of stuff that you would call sentimental clutter, the way to do that is, instead of thinking of it as a whole massive thing, think of it in terms of a treasure hunt. In that room are three or four treasures that have the strongest, positive, most lovely memory that you want. And when you look at them, they will make your heart sing. And your job is to go into that room and find those four treasures. Not everything, just four treasures. And, you know, in my case, I have those here on the shelf. I have, you know, two treasures that are here on the shelf from, you know, my parents' house. I had to kind of, you know, close down my parents' house just this past year. And one of the treasures are my father's World War II medals.
Oh, wow.
And they're here in a great little frame.
Yeah.
And the other is a fantastic photo of my mum and dad at their 50th wedding anniversary. And I was so worried about everything else, but these two things are the things, and they're framed and have a place of honor in my home. That's another thing. You have to give the treasures a place of honor and respect. If you can find them, pull them out, and give them a place of honor and respect, all the other stuff can go. Because every time you walk into a room and look at them, you smile and your heart sings.
I love that. So the best way then to move through some of the emotional stuff is to give it a place of honor, or to move through it to help you
absolutely honor it. You know, I worked with a woman a couple of years ago whose grandmother passed away 26 years ago. When she passed away, her granddaughter put every single thing from her grandmother's house in storage. 26 years.
Oh, my gosh.
In storage. She had remembered most fondly cooking with her grandmother. So we went through and found all the baking items in a huge frame. We framed things that would are meaningless to others.
Right.
Handwritten recipe cards, a pastry roller, you know, some graters, a spatula, old-style spatulas and that. We framed them in this beautiful big frame and hung them in her kitchen.
How fantastic.
When she looked at those, her grandmother came right back.
Yep.
And was standing there with her in a way that was beautiful and loving and present. And suddenly, all the rest of the stuff was meaningless. She let go of almost all the rest of it straight away.
That is wonderful. Well, so this is actually a perfect segue because we're moving into a season with a lot of family gatherings and a lot of family present. It's also a time that can get very overwhelming with clutter.
Sure.
What are your suggestions for how to keep sane during this time of the year?
You know, there is one simple suggestion, and I actually practiced this myself yesterday. We have 36 people coming to our house for Thanksgiving dinner.
Wow.
And not one family member.
Wow.
36 friends and just
sounds like a great party, yeah.
And I'm doing the cooking. So for the holiday season, the way to survive the holiday season is to, I know this sounds lame, is to make lists. Make lists. I spent most of yesterday making a list for Thursday for Thanksgiving, and it was, you know, first a shopping list, then a seating list, then for Thursday I have a literally 10-minute by 10-minute list from 9 a.m.
Wow.
in the morning until serving dinner at 6 p.m.
Oh my goodness.
And what that does, if you make a list, whether it's about, you know, stuff you have to buy at the grocery store, the timetable for the day for the holiday season, the gifts you want to give, the people who are staying, you know, it doesn't matter. If you make a list, what that does is it takes all of that stuff out of your head and puts it on paper. And somehow, psychologically, that puts you more at ease, because somehow then you don't feel panicked that you have to remember all that stuff. And at very least, I promise you will sleep easier at night. And put a pad and a piece of paper by the bed so that if you're laying in bed tossing around thinking, oh, I forgot about Aunt Gertie's, you know, embroidered cap that I want to give her, you know, you can just make that little note. And the moment it's out of your head, you get that bit of clutter literally out of your head onto a pad and paper, you'll be able to sleep easy, ride easier, and you'll have a plan for the holiday season that'll take a bit of stress. And a good glass, a glass of really good wine doesn't hurt either.
I was going to say, is there a better time to make the list? And it sounds like the best time to make the list is when you're drinking wine.
Yeah, well, as I say, I'm a huge advocate of better living through Chardonnay. So, you know, that doesn't hurt. And do it in advance. Like, it's really worth it. I literally spent about 5 hours yesterday sitting at my dining room table making those lists, because I just was getting so stressed out about buying the food, getting the recipes right, cooking and serving on schedule for 36 people. And today I feel pretty relaxed about it.
As you should. I mean, that's a long, like when I think of a list, I guess one of the other underlying messages is really commit to making a list, because for me, making a list is 20 minutes, you get it on paper and you go. And you're, you know, 5 hours making lists for a dinner is impressive.
Well, you know, it was the only way I could pull, you know, it's also, those lists include who is bringing what. Some people are contributing.
Yeah.
Exactly what time, you know, we're cooking three turkeys, exactly what time the turkey comes in and the turkey comes out, what time you tent the turkey, what time you take the tent off so it doesn't burn.
Yeah.
You know, it's I know it's crazy and really pedantic, but at this time of year with so much going on, do yourself a favor and invest in a few minutes or an hour or so just to make some detailed lists. I guarantee it'll take the sting out of the season.
I love that. Great advice, and great advice to end on. Peter, you have been absolutely amazing, as I said that you were at the beginning. Thank you so much for joining us at Art of Potential.
Totally my pleasure.
You have just listened to the Art of Potential show with Kristen Heemstra. Please take a moment to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.